I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It was 20 years ago today that Sexy Sven taught the boys to play. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Betway. Subs galore for Jose and Manchester United face Arsenal. It's Friday, 30th of October. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Russell.
Tomorrow, if we're going to be precise, when Old Svennigans was announced as England manager. What a fabulous Friday we've got for you on the Football Ramble today, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. How are you marking the occasion?
I'm not wearing any clothes.
You're just going to walk around your house in a little tiny towel and turn the whole thing into like a steamy sauna.
Well,
yeah. Oh, you know, a friend of mine once, you know, you can get free saunas while you're waiting at Helsinki Airport. And one of my friends once almost missed a plane because he heard the final call while he was sitting there in the nip waiting.
Wow.
In the nip. No, which no is, departures. Which is in the sauna.
Which is the opposite to how people who have got too much luggage approach getting on the plane. They put all their clothes on.
Yeah, that's it.
Like ski suits and five jumpers.
That's phenomenal. For
the EasyJet suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's very good, that.
They're obsessed with saunas in Finland, aren't they? There's quite a famous meme that goes around of someone's done a Google map of every sauna in Finland. And it's basically like every pub in England. Mm. But times 10.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely anyway. Incredible.
Honestly, that must look like a Lionel Messi heat map.
Exactly. Hurry up though, Marcus. We've got to get through Andy listening to a dog eat a carrot.
We do indeed. Goodness knows what's going to happen next.
I like the idea of Andy doing research for hopefully a regular feature where he has to go around listening to animals eating things.
Yeah.
it's like trying to research for Luke's game, but even more surreal.
Oh, dear. Speaking of Finland, I'd like to talk about, very briefly, if I may, before we get to what Mourinho did at half-time, a player who, of course, played in Finland for a little while, Alfredo Morelos.
Oh, did he play in Finland? I didn't know that.
He did, yeah.
Okay.
Colombia to Finland.
Wow.
What a culture shock.
The road less travelled.
Good knowledge for such a tenuous link there, Marcus.
Yeah. All right, Andy. You had to point it out.
Oh, it's easy from the sidelines, Andy.
Gordon Bennett.
I get them all right on Luke's game every single week.
We shall see.
Well, the old Firm were in action. And good news for Scotland. They've got two places in the Champions League preliminaries.
Yeah,
the
coefficients have been changed.
They've done well. They've done very well. Rangers won again. But Morelos, 21 European goals for Rangers, equaling Wee Ally McCoist's record.
Yeah.
It's impressive, that.
Also, what's really more impressive about him, I think, as a player, is just his mentality.
Even when he celebrated that goal, one of his teammates went to put his arm around him and he threw him off.
Yeah, no, just not interested.
Oh, Alfredo.
Yeah.
For a man of your talent, be a bit more likeable.
But the Europa League, I mean, you just get so many games in the Europa League to choose from.
Yeah.
I don't know, it doesn't feel natural to flick down your Sky Sports football app and you get all the way down to like Group Y. There's this really
group.
It makes me watch less games rather than more. Like, I'm quite happy to have a three-screen setup on a Champions League night, for example,
standard,
if I'm at home.
Yeah.
Or on, you know, any Sunday afternoon. But for the Europa League, it's too daunting. You know, it's like if you're at school and you've got an extraordinary amount of homework and you're like, I actually can't do any of it.
Yeah.
You know,
there is a danger if you don't put your colours to the mast. You know, you.
I don't know how you watch it more than one at once.
Maximum of two games for me on Europa.
How do you specialise? What's your kind of your standard?
What's your technique?
Well, tonight, I just really wanted to watch Lille versus Celtic.
Yes.
So that's what I watched with a bit of Spurs in the background.
Well, I'll tell you what, great first half for Celtic. They threw away the lead.
Well, you say they threw it away, but...
they were 2-0 up and they drew 2-2.
Yeah, but... that implies...
Whether they threw it away or it was taken from them,
that implies
the result
them
is
knocking
the same
off when Lille, you know, haven't lost a game this season. So yeah. I think...
There we go.
It's a result that they would have loved before the start. And I thought they were very good.
Scott Bain in goal saved a pen.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Come
go on.
On.
Don't leave it out there.
Oh, you thought you could score a penalty pass, mate.
In a way, I never thought this would be possible. It's more camp than Bain. You've got like a little bit of a camp. It's a bit of Camp David in there.
Well, a little more from Camp Bain tomorrow. Yes, indeed. I did very, very briefly. Rangers have played 17 games in all competitions this season. 14 clean sheets.
Yeah. It's a sort of a record that will get Steven Gerrard the Liverpool job.
I was going to say, Gerrard, not doing too shabby there. Mm. Anyway, let's move on to Tottenham Hotspur. Royal Antwerp, it'd be a good win for them. Although Peter Drury, the commentator, who I love, we've had him in the studio, marvellous man. He was very much talking about the stars of Tottenham Hotspur turning up to Royal Antwerp. And of course,
for a bit before being subbed off.
Exactly. Yeah. You can only see them for a short while. I mean, Antwerp have been unbeaten at home for 14 months, so they're no mugs at home.
Are they not top of their league as well? They've won every game this season. Yeah. Certainly getting on for that. I'm pretty sure they're top of their league.
Mm-hmm. They
haven't won every game since they're on top of the league. I just checked.
Right, okay, I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, when it comes to Belgium,
should have checked beforehand.
That's all right.
Mental note to myself.
We got there.
That's
in
how
the
broadcasting
end.
Works. Sorry, carry on.
Well, maybe we'll sub you at half time. but yes, they. I mean, Mourinho said a couple of days ago, probably with regards to Dele Alli, among others, he said it hurts to leave players out. He made 9 changes from the previous match. And then he sort of tried to undo all his work at half time, didn't he?
I'm absolutely stunned that you've not led this chat with absolute anger that Joe Hart didn't get a gig in goal.
Yeah, I was going to. I thought to myself, I've had my spin. I'm going to just give it a little.
It could have been a miraculous week for Joe Hart. You know, Michel Vorm finally retires.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I made a
Joe Hart's in his ear every 5 minutes.
Do you know, I actually made an error about it because I actually think Vorm left the club in the summer. So actually, there was no.
But
Hart arrived.
But you'd think the stage would be set for Big Joe Hart and his Adam's apple to get involved. And he doesn't even get a look in.
I know.
Second greatest Adam's apple in football.
Behind?
Cristiano Ronaldo, of course.
Obvious. Sorry, I should have known that.
That's very much Ronaldo's line on it as well.
Yeah. But the one thing I'm interested in about this game is that, and you guys touched on it briefly yesterday, but I don't think you did it justice, and perhaps you weren't able to do it justice because it's been updated since, is Big Jose's Instagram feed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is. It's a must follow. I mean, it's, by any stretch of the imagination, it's a must follow.
Yeah.
It's a bit like a Russian play, isn't it? You know, him
gazing
out the window, wistful.
A Russian doll. you follow that account, and then there's like a little horse, a little Jose sort of thing.
But there's a picture of him that came out after the game last night. For those who haven't seen it, it's got a heavily curated comment, as you'd expect. Mm-hmm. Bad performances deserve bad results. I hope everyone in this bus is as upset as I am tomorrow training at 11 a.m. But the picture that they've got of him, it must have taken them such a long time to get the right look.
He's
got his mask on, he's gazing with the 1,000-yard stare into the distance, and he's on his own with a bag next to him, like a briefcase bag.
Yeah. Yes.
And he very much looks like he's defending himself in The Hague. Because he's got his glasses around his neck on a string. and it's got a load of the popcorn thing's great. It's also got he's done a picture of himself reading Hristo Stoichkov's autobiography. There's everything in there.
Yeah.
But I mean, nothing surprising with Mourinho, but that he's actually got someone to take that photo of him.
Oh, I'd love to be there for that.
It's a leap, isn't it? But I would just, you know, you must be so tempted just once, especially with a photo like that and the indignation in the caption as well. You just think, you know, it would cost you your job, but as his digital services manager, I think you'd be quite tempted to put the little digital sunglasses on him, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that happened recently in a press conference. Obviously, all the press conferences are being shown online at the moment, mainly for journalists, but some smaller clubs are doing it with their fans.
And because some people are scared of being too close to Steven Gerrard. Generally,
yes, of course.
That much, how aggressive he is.
That's right. But 1860 Munich did a pre-match press conference, and their head coach, someone had put a pair of digital sunglasses on him. anyway, they shut down the feed early and said there'd been a technical malfunction and apologised to fans for it.
Oh dear.
The woman who zoomed herself into a potato and work meeting and couldn't turn it off again. Great stuff. Take your, in these pandemic times, take your laughs where you can.
It's very, very.
But annoying. Mourinho was understandably annoyed. Mm-hmm. He kind of made a couple of points, which in a way, I wonder if this suits Mourinho to an extent, because there are players that he, as there always is with Mourinho, players doesn't fancy, players he's not going to really use that much, and
players he's going to piss off.
Yeah, I think so. And realistically, they're going to qualify from their Europa League group. I think we can all agree on that. They're almost certainly going to be fine. So, as a result, in isolation, it's a poor result because you'd expect them to have the players to beat Royal Antwerp. But in the grand scheme of things, it's probably not going to be anything more than a footnote in what will be, I expect, at least a reasonably successful European campaign or a reasonably successful season. But if he can bring players in that he doesn't fancy and say, "Look, I've given you a chance and you've let me down," which gives him a lot more latitude to do what he wants to do.
That's very much sort of strict application of one version of the truth, isn't it? Because the fact is, if you change 9 players in a team and then change another 4 at half time, what are the players meant to do with that?
Well, I'm losing 1-0 away to a side who've got a very good home record. You know, these results can happen in European competition. I'm not. If I was a Spurs fan, I wouldn't be that fussed by that. It's actually what Mourinho did at half time, bringing off 4 players, of course. And he said, "I would have liked to have made 11 changes at half time. I didn't make 5 because I was afraid of a long 45 minutes without any changes to make." And then he goes on to say, "You know what our best team is. You know the same thing that I know, that everybody knows. But I always like to think that the players deserve an opportunity. We have a big squad with lots of good players. My future choices are going to be very easy." Now, what does that do for team morale? At the start of this week, they'd beaten Burnley away in a tough game. They'd got the 3 points, and suddenly, off the back of, you know, the likes of Carragher and Neville and other people saying, "Oh, I tell you what, can Mourinho, is he turning it around?" and so on. You watch the Spurs documentary, it finishes with Mourinho saying, "This is an unhappy club ever since that Champions League final defeat. They've needed to sort of pick themselves up. He's trying to build it, he's trying to get things going." And then something like this happens. And I don't want to kind of blow it out of proportion, but we start the week with Mourinho could do something this season, and then suddenly it's like, hang on a minute, is he in danger of losing the dressing room and pissing everybody off?
I don't think that is the case. I think that's too far at this point.
Okay.
And I think the result they had against Burnley, as I said on Monday, was incredible, a really, really big result for them. They've made a lot of changes, as Andy's alluded to. It's a setback. As I said, in isolation, it's not ideal because you don't want to lose games, particularly against however good Royal Antwerp are at home. The Spurs are a better team than them. I think we can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll see what comes out of the game at home to Brighton this weekend, which again, you'd expect them to win. I also like to give a shout out to Richie Delatt, who played well for Royal Antwerp and is a Premier League winner.
Oh,
lest
yes.
we forget.
Yes.
Probably the most unheralded Premier League winner of all time. Maybe excusing perhaps David May.
No, May played his part.
He was very heralded by himself as well.
Yeah. I'm not saying about it, but they played the part. I'm not. I'm just saying if you were on Pointless and they said Premier League winning players.
Yeah.
It might well be a pointless answer.
I think May did score a goal against Middlesbrough when Manchester United needed to win and or equal or better Newcastle's result.
I'm sure Richie did make a contribution. I just can't remember as well.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. But anyway, what you said there about what are the players meant to do with that? This kind of thing, as I said, I don't want to kind of blow it out of proportion and say suddenly he's lost a dressing room on the back of this. But something like that, if you're a player, you're going to be really pissed off. And when he says, you know my best team, oh, but we've got lots of good players, you will feel very unloved, unwanted, if you're one of those subs who was subbed off at half time. And of course, if you're Dele Alli, you're just going to think, well, what?
But that's how he rolls, isn't it? I mean, Mourinho does this sort of thing where, as you say, if any other coach said it, you'd say he's in serious danger of losing the dressing room. Like half a dozen times a season? maybe more? That is what you sign up for when you sign Mourinho.
And you also have to remember one of the subs particularly, they're not match fit, and possibly two of the players. Is Vinicius match fit, would you say?
No, not
probably
quite.
Not, and Bale isn't. No. So the two of them, you could argue, are just a case of building up match fitness.
What about on Gareth Bale? Because you brought him off in the second half. Bale's radar's a little bit off, isn't it? I think it's fair to say. But Mourinho said, with regards to Bale, I think he is very pleased with the level of organisation we have in the club. Probably he is not used to it.
That's probably because Real Madrid never went in, that's why.
little dig at his former club there. We know he's partial.
So hard on Southampton.
Yeah.
Not hard enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the Dele Alli situation is that sort of, with regards to that specific player, it could really kind of spiral out of control to the point of Dele Alli, we hardly see him again. Mourinho is trying to almost sort of bully him into getting back into the first team. Well, not bully him, but, you know, really kind of strong-arming back in there.
But isn't the nature of top-level football now, and also the composition of Spurs' squad, sort of pitted against players who are out of form finding form? Mm-hmm. And I think you look at Alli, you look at Bale actually. What Bale looks like to me is someone who could do with 8 games in a row. Mm-hmm. He's not going to get it.
No.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, but if you think of other good players who've come off difficult spells, who've come to the Premier League, it's very, very hard to find that time, that space, that patience to get yourself up to your former level. Radamel Falcao, very good example, I think.
Yeah, and also on the Dele Alli thing, perhaps it's a bit simplistic, but hopefully not too simplistic to say that just doesn't necessarily feel like a Mourinho-type player. He's not someone who works his nuts off the ball. He's not a big, strong, powerful midfield player.
Needs freedom.
Yeah,
needs license.
Yeah, exactly. And he gave the ball away a lot last night as well.
But then Mourinho did get a bit of a tune out of Ozil at Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah,
for 65 minutes every week.
Yeah, he got hooked every game.
Yeah, but still,
and I would
what an hour though.
I think it also depends on the makeup of the team around him. Okay. And I would also argue that I'm probably going to get in a bit of trouble for saying this. You've driven me to this, but in terms of talent and ceiling, Ozil's a better player than Alli.
Okay.
And he's one more.
Yeah. Well, the second point, nobody can certainly.
No, exactly. Maybe I'll use that as a get out of jail.
Yeah. But, I mean,
on the old social media later. Yeah.
But with Dele, I mean, that's a situation that we would just have to see how it sort of unfolds, I suppose.
There's always going to be casualties. Managers always. I think footballers understand that as part of the game, when a new coach comes in, yes, it can be a really positive thing for players, but it can also be a negative thing because if a manager wants to play in a certain way or has an idea about a certain player. Mm-hmm. You might have to find that you have to go somewhere else. And he's not going to be the first player to have that if he does go through it.
He needs to speak to Iker Casillas, I feel. We'll chat to him, maybe. Perk him up a bit.
Yeah.
Happens to the best of us, son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look him up, all the stuff I won. But yes, they are playing Brighton on Sunday night. And you'd expect Spurs to win that one, but you never know in this topsy-turvy season. Another game this weekend, which has piqued my interest, is Villa versus Southampton. Normally, perhaps it wouldn't be a fixture to pick out. But I don't know, Southampton are going well. And of course, Aston Villa, you know, they hammered Liverpool. It seems a little while ago now. But Andy, this is an interesting game. After Ollie Watkins scoring and whatnot, you've got two English strikers there with Watkins and Ings who know where the back of the net is.
Yeah, you do. And I think Southampton's quite a dangerous opponent for Villa, actually, especially the way they've come out of that performance against Everton, because the thing is, it's easy to think that results now have been a very long time ago, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just because it's so much football at the moment.
An international break, I think, was off the back of that win against Liverpool.
Yeah, it does feel a very long time ago now. And I think if you go back with Villa, they're a little bit unlucky against Leeds. There are a few things that could have gone for them. But the way it went after they conceded the first goal, that is something that Dean Smith is going to say, right, we've really got to put that behind us, and we've really got to put that behind us with quite a strong performance. I think it's not just the results that have been good with Villa so far, it has been the performances.
Which is surprising. It is surprising. Considering how they were last season and how they finished. And they've signed Watkins, admittedly, and one or two others. But this
Barkley.
Yeah, true. But it's not been a huge
turnover. No, and I think that's kind of worked for them to a certain extent. And the fact that Smith has obviously put faith in those players and said, you're the players who kept me up. When at one point, it's easy to forget, it looked absolutely hopeless. Mm. They looked totally gone, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I do have a slight issue, though, with people saying, oh, well, you could tell Villa were going to do well this season because of the way they finished last season. Just because a team surges at the end of the season when they're, you know, staring down the barrel, I don't think he's necessarily a good indicator of anything. It's an indicator of needs must when the devil drives, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
well, you couldn't have predicted Leicester would go on to win the league after their surge.
No, and I'm not going to predict Aston Villa are going to go on and win the league here. But I think they need to show that the game against Leeds is a blip that they can get over. I think that's very important. And like I say, the content of the performances has been really good. It's not just the results. And I think Villa have been really impressive in their style. You know, I think you can have a couple of surprising results at the start of the season, and you can have especially a couple of freak results and league positions in the particular context that we're living in at the moment. But the performances were no fluke, and they need to prove that wasn't just a little purple patch, but that is what they are now.
I mean, they're not going to be the last team to get turned over in a relentless fashion by Leeds this season.
No.
I mean, if you look at the pattern of the goals that Bamford scored, he scores one, 10 minutes after half time. There's another little, not a very long break, and he gets another one, and then he adds another one. And before you know it, Leeds play in that kind of thunder and lightning style that you can't have a moment's rest. And that's, I think Leeds are a really good team. Yeah. I think
they are, but I think it's not like Villa were dismal in that or anything like that. You're right. They just got the game taken away from them, really, in about 15 minutes, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Southampton are an interesting proposition because they look really organised and they look like they've got a really good coach. And I know that Andy was talking a bit yesterday about how, you know, perhaps, I think you were talking particularly at a European level in the context of Solskjaer, that perhaps the coach isn't as important at the very, very top level. I think at this kind of level, the middling Premier League level is actually really important. Mm-hmm. And I think that Hasenhüttl has a grip of that team and a grip of that club. And even if they lose or they have a poor result against, like they did against Spurs back in September, don't ever really get the impression that he's kind of not in full control of what's happening and that they don't know who the manager is and that they've lost their style, they've lost their kind of their motivation or whatever. And I think it might be a legacy from the Leicester win back in the day, which obviously we always have to talk about. It's a year ago now, but the reason I say that is because it felt a bit like a kind of year zero for Hasenhüttl at Southampton. Mm-hmm. And he could have gone, and it could have gone completely south, but it didn't. And ever since then, I think he's been able to steady them and to show that they're a team in his own image, and he knows exactly what he wants them to do. And if they go for a period of time and have a couple of poor results, they're not going to panic, and it's not going to be anything more than just, it's a difficult league, it's a competitive league, and this happens. So this game, it's actually quite an interesting one because it will give us the measure of Villa because they started really well and they were beaten. And it'll also tell us a bit about where Southampton are at off the back of a really good win against an informed side in Everton. So in many ways, you look at it once and you think, oh, I can't fancy that. But when you think about it a bit, you think, actually, it'll be a really good game.
Who would you like to win?
I would like Aston Villa to win well. Yeah, very well.
To win well.
Yeah.
There we are. All right, ladies and gentlemen, after the break, we're going to talk about Manchester United and Arsenal.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hello, I am Sven-Göran Eriksson, and you are listening to the Football Ramble.
There he is again. Welcome back, everybody, to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Betway. Apparently, it was 20 years ago tomorrow, not today, that Sven taught the boys
to play.
Depends
when you're listening.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something there for everyone. If you listen to this on a Saturday morning, it's 20 years ago today. I wanted to ask Andy how OTC was yesterday. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, so maybe you can sell it in to me as well as the listeners.
Go on, Andy.
Yes, it was excellent, if I do say so myself, with the excellent Dotton Adebayo and David Cartledge. We talked about... lots of Champions League stuff, Juventus Barcelona, where they are at the moment, and a bit about the two young princes of the Champions League. Oh, and also about the Bernardo Silva, Jorge Jesus spat.
Nice.
Oh, that's definitely worth a while.
Have a word with your dad. Come on.
So people just need to search Football Ramble Presents wherever they get their pods and subscribe to make sure they never miss an episode of Not Just on the Continent, the dedicated European football show, but Book Club, Ramble Meets, At the Match. Our most recent At the Match is Andy taking me to Peckham Town, etc., etc. There's a Book Club episode on Monday, which is an absolute, and I've heard this one, so I can say this for a fact, it's an absolutely brilliant insight into the not only the player, Matt Piper, but the ghostwriter, Joe Bruin's story of Matt Piper's career, which is one with some very, very interesting aspects. So definitely check that out on Monday. It's the Book Club with Kate Mason, Joe Bruin, and Matt Piper, ex-Leicester City.
Lovely old job. And right, everybody, it's time for some emails.
Just email the show at footballramble.com. Right now, so Peter, Vince, or Kate, or Jules, or Jim, or Andy, Luke, all my kids can read it out. Well done.
What a lot of people don't know about that jingle is that everyone knows it's Pete singing along, but they don't know that it's Jules doing the female vocal. Just putting it out there, they don't know that.
How dare you?
The Pat Benatar of the Ramble.
I think it sounds like Jules a bit.
How dare you take that young lady's work away from her? No, I'm not talking about Jules, I'm talking about the actual singer.
Yeah, Jules will claim it for sure.
Oh, if it was Jules, it would have had a swear word, didn't it?
Yeah, it's true, actually, yeah. And it can't be Pete on pure form because there's not a dog in the background eating a carrot.
Very true. Yeah. All right, shout footballramble.com. You can also tweet us at footballramble. There's an email here from Steve Neat, I think that's pronounced.
Great name.
Lovely name. It's either Steve Neat, but I'm going to go for Steve Neat.
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 Yeah, Neaty. Neat and tidy.
Neato. Steve says, bringing it back to the youth football tactics, but jumping to the opposite end of the spectrum from Guardiola, the under-12s team I coached played a team once whose strategy was to have their biggest player hang about their own 18-yard line and lump it long whenever the ball came near him. I think we can all relate to that.
I think I might have actually performed that role.
His name was Luke. Yeah. This was in the USA.
Oh, it wasn't me then.
So naturally, the parents of our opponents uttered oohs and ahs whenever this happened as the ball went really far. it's Warnock-esque. Yeah. Being a football fan in the US is like being a pilgrim in an unholy land, and my assistant coach and I, as football purists, found the strategy very irksome, particularly as it worked annoyingly well for most of the match. The thing is, it does work often at that age.
Yeah, of course.
But then it is very much a cliff edge to it.
Yeah. And I think some would wonder why the English football international has been in the doldrums for so long until recent years. And then you think back to your own experiences and go, well, I was put up front for a bit because I was the tallest. And then I was put at the back of the bit because I was the tallest. Yeah. And then I was put in goal for a bit because I was the tallest.
Indeed. Well, Steve goes on to say, imagine our delight when our most skillful player went on a mazy run, which included leaving the clearance merchant on his backside before rounding the keeper and dribbling the ball into the goal. My assistant coach responded by yelling at the top of his voice, there's no big kick for that. Thanks very much, Steve.
Yeah, I have to say, I really enjoy the resentment in the writing of this clearance merchant.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the football purist.
Steve Neat likes it neat and tidy. I love it if his assistant coach was called Dave Tidy.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be neat and tidy.
That would be very good.
It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It might be called Jim Passing Triangles.
Yeah. Less likely.
Just Jim Triangles would have been fine. Yeah. I've never known Andy look like a cat who's been given a saucer without milk.
Yeah. Like
that, is it? Right, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about Manchester United and Arsenal. Of course, a Sunday afternoon treat. Arsenal have warmed up very well for this game with a 3-0 win in the Europa League against Dundalk. Lovely goal from Nicolas Pepe. Before we talk about the football, this is talking about the football. Before we talk about Arsenal, I have to bring this to the table straight away. Dundalk became the first team to not commit a foul in a Europa League match. Now,
piss poor. A few absolutely
people,
piss poor.
A few people tweeted me about this, and I thought, what on earth are they playing at? And then I saw the coach, Giovagnoli, who said after the game, our team is so polite. They're such gentlemen. They work hard and fight hard, but won't use other things to stop the opponent. And I thought, you've charmed me.
Wait, they did.
You've disarmed me in my anger about that.
It's hard to interpret this stat because... And Andy's the brainy one here, so he might better help us out here. Mm. You first hear that, prima facie, you're like, okay, that's piss poor because you want to get right amongst it. Mm. It's the only chance you've got, really, to try and maybe intimidate a bit and kind of get on the front foot. And I watched this game, and they actually played pretty well for the first 35 to 40 minutes. And then you hear they don't make any fouls the whole game, you think that's piss poor. But they made three times the amount of tackles that Arsenal did, which you would expect because they didn't have as much of the ball. Mm. But they're still making the tackle, so maybe they're just really good at tackling.
Oh, yeah, very precise.
Yeah, maybe they are. I mean, it's an easier statistic to sell if you've won 3-0, isn't it?
Didn't Lucio once go for a whole World Cup without making a foul?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I think he did, yeah. I think he went for a whole World Cup at centre-back for Brazil without conceding a foul.
Can we say he went through a World Cup without being caught doing a foul?
That's more accurate. More accurate, yeah.
Back in those days.
Yeah, because it's even more impressive when you think that most of the time he's playing alongside Walter Samwell, who's basically the crown.
Well, that was Inter, not the World
Cup. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, club. Yeah. And so for him to be able to flip from that to the good guy again, it's amazing. But anyway,
you don't need to do any fouls when you've got Walter Samwell next to you, do you?
True.
That might have been a few years after, but I take the point. Yeah, Mourinho's Inter with Samuel beside you.
Yeah.
It's a very different style.
But I thought, look, it's difficult for us to talk about, it happens quite a lot when we talk about games like this, it almost automatically comes across as patronising. I don't mean it in a patronising way. Mm. At all. I thought, given the scale of the challenge that Dundalk have been given and given how well they've done to get to this stage, I thought they gave a really decent account of themselves, particularly in the first half. And it wasn't a great surprise to see Arsenal come out winners. I will concede that I only decided to watch it because I was hoping there would be some kind of comedy upset, because for some reason when that happens to Arsenal, possibly because I'm friends with Jim, it's funnier. Mm. Sadly, we weren't gifted that. But I also liked the fact that Arsenal had Elneny in midfield and Dundalk had McElhenney in midfield.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah, it felt like a kind of Irish version of the same player.
What did you think of Arsenal's back line? They had three centre-backs injured, two not registered for the Europa League. So Mustafi, Xhaka and Kolasinac were in the back three.
I mean, wow. That's something, isn't it?
You say wow, I'd say oof.
Yeah. I know Xhaka isn't this kind of player, and I don't want to, I'm saying that as a caveat, because otherwise Andy will literally tell me off on this show. But with a defensive midfield player of some level, it's not that difficult to drop back in there in a three.
Yeah, I know, but he's not that much this
defender. He's not one. And Xhaka isn't the example of that, really, though, is he?
And he's not being guided by a centre back next to him either, which is a big thing. But I thought for Dundalk, what must have been the most disappointing thing is, as you say, they did play pretty well. And then not only did they concede, what, 3 goals in 7 minutes either side of half time, something like that?
Yeah.
The first two goals that they conceded, oh my goodness. It's just, you can't be giving away goals like that.
Oh, the goalkeeper.
Yeah, that was bad.
Piss poor Andy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Slugs, little slugs, little gentlemanly slugs.
Yeah. But you want to see it, because Marcus, you famously piped up about teams not getting yellows or whatever.
Burn Albion when they got hammered by Man City.
Would you like Dundalk to get more amongst it?
No, because the stats suggest that, like I say, with Big Gio, with his quote there saying they're gentlemen and they won't use those kind of reach for those tools, perhaps, and with the statistics on the tackling. No, I think they've shown a bit of Irish charm and it's gone straight to my heart.
I mean, maybe it's almost beneficial from Arsenal that in a way, because they've been forced to defend without defenders, albeit against not elite opposition. That's maybe a little bit of a next step in the Arteta plan, because, and I'm thinking particularly about his work with Guardiola, if you can defend by sort of keeping the ball, particularly in a game like this, I mean, that's something completely different, isn't it? Because if you look at the way Arsenal have played under Arteta generally, clearly there's a philosophy, but it's been quite possession light, recognising the limitations of where they are at the moment. If they can evolve to a slightly different way of defending and a slightly different way of playing, I mean, this is really what the Europa League should be. And certainly for teams like Arsenal and Tottenham, there should be a level of experimentation that you don't really have that much room to do in competitive matches.
And they're
matches.
Playing a much, weaker side.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you looked at that group when it came out of the hat for Arsenal, and you thought it's easier than last year's one. And as we said, and as I've said a few times on here, the point where I realised Arsenal were in massive trouble last season is when they weren't going to win 6 out of 6 in their group, because really they are the sort of club with the sort of squad who should be absolutely breezing through the Europa League group, because the Europa League groups, people talk about the Champions League groups and the difference between the haves and the have-nots is far more pronounced in the Europa League, and for, as you were saying with Spurs before, Marcus, for teams like Spurs and Arsenal, it should be easy. But if you have to take a hit here and there by trying stuff out, I think that's fine.
Yeah, will they try anything out at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon, Luke?
Well, I hope they do.
Yeah,
we've got to try something. You need to get in there with at least some idea of what
at least
you want to do.
A few crosses into the box.
Yeah. I think in some ways this is a little bit upsetting, because it feels like a facsimile of one of the greatest fixtures in Premier League history. Sunday afternoon, 4:30, I remember the day, I'm not trying to be all Uncle Albert about it, but during the war, back in the day, this was like the one you look forward to all weekend.
I know what you mean, especially after doing that Arsene Wenger ramble meets recently, and we were talking about the great Arsenal-United rivalry, and I thought, wow, I really miss that.
Well, let's get it back this Sunday, Andy.
Yeah. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should just walk straight up to Mikel Arteta and just plant one right on him and get the pizzas out, all sorts.
All that business. Well,
if you told him it was in the name of nostalgia, he would, because as we know, Ole loves a bit of that.
He does. Yeah, it's what I did in the 90s.
Well, he does, Andy, and perhaps he should take a leaf out of a former Manchester United manager's book, Louis van Gaal. Ryan Giggs said recently, the first time I met him, he punched me in the stomach.
What's the context?
Oh, dear. This is Giggs's words. I've gone to meet... You know it's a footballer because they're talking in that sort of past, present tense kind of... Yeah. I've gone to meet him at a hotel. He's opened the door, looked me up and down and gone, you're in good shape, and then punched me in the stomach.
The thing is, Luca Toni...
Giggs, here, I'm slack. I'm one of these.
Luca Toni's probably listening to that story and thinking, you got off lightly there, mate.
Yeah. What are these? Luca Toni got his nuts out.
Yeah,
that was a balls.
He got his balls out. Yeah,
yeah. Giggs said he was different. He was very dominating.
That's a great Twitter poll, Marcus.
It's marvelous, isn't it?
Would you rather be punched in the stomach by a 60-year-old man or have to look at his nuts?
I mean, yeah, the way I understood it, he wasn't exposing himself particularly to Luca Toni. It's just that Luca Toni happened to be near
him. It was the whole squad, the whole team. You say
Toni was closest.
Yeah.
Collateral damage. It can happen. Can happen. Can it? Can happen.
It can. I think I think you've got to have a look at Van Gaal's testes, haven't you? I wouldn't want to get... He's got old man strength.
Do you think he has?
I think he
would. He's not got Nigel Pearson old man strength.
No, but Pearson's like the... Yeah. You know, and Pearson's a bit younger than
him
as
well. I'd probably go for the balls, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably would. Because, you never know what's going to happen. You could get injured.
Come on, Giggsy, one of these.
Why are you punching your own player? I mean, I can't even remember if Ron Giggs was still playing.
It's amazing to think that they went on to work so closely afterwards, isn't it?
Yeah, Giggs did say he was very sad to leave Manchester United, but he was also very relieved because it was very hard under Van Gaal.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Pun intended.
But that, I mean, I don't mean to be... I don't mean to be kind of down on it because it's important to enjoy it. The football we can enjoy at the moment because of the situation we're in. But I mean, I'd love it to have a big crowd there. I know May not have got a plan now to bring a limited amount of fans in once they get given the go ahead. But I mean,
well, the way the country's going at the moment, or the continent, or the world, who knows?
But you know what I mean? The pumping atmosphere at Old Trafford for May Night Arsenal game, vintage era, it was the pinnacle, really, wasn't it? For me, that's the defining rivalry of the Premier League, you'd say.
Yes. But I would, though, if I would like Van Gaal still to be in charge of Manchester United, because I prefer watching the games without the crowd noise. And I'd like to hear him barking away.
Yeah.
But what do you fancy for this one, Andy? Because, I mean, Manchester United, you know, they've won well in the Champions League this season, and we were saying how it's...
They've got an amazing record midweek, Man United. Yeah. They've never lost a game midweek for like 18 games or something.
I know, and this is on a Sunday, which is why I fear for them.
Yeah, depends how you judge it.
I think this is absolutely enormous.
We push it to 1 minute past midnight.
Well, it's like in Spain. It's up to the home team, isn't it, in Spain, to set the kickoff time.
Yeah, true.
You could do that. But
you have to tell them in advance.
The day is one thing. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're 6 hours early, fellas.
Do you fancy a Man United winner?
Maybe.
You're sitting on the fence again.
Yeah, yesterday you were an absolute despicable yesterday. Despicable.
Maybe.
Yeah. The only thing to be sure about yesterday was it was a dog eating a carrot.
That was quite easy.
Yeah, it was easy. Yeah. He needs to refine that feature.
I think this is absolutely huge for both teams. And I think it's particularly huge for Arsenal because we were talking about the game at Liverpool earlier in the season where I thought the performance was more important than the result. You know, if you lose at Liverpool, fine. You know, they're the best. It's absolutely fine. But all the time with Arteta, we're looking at incremental gains, aren't we? I think they need to get a result from this because United have been vulnerable at home this season. And forget the Leipzig game because, A, the result, as we said yesterday, was slightly flattering and they took advantage of a team being exactly where they wanted them. I just wonder if there are parallels to draw between the game with Leipzig and this game with Arsenal because, as we talked about, with Arsenal being quite possession light and being very, very good in transitions. I do wonder if United score the first goal in this, is it very difficult for Arsenal to come back? I think perhaps it is. So to not sit on the fence, if United get the first goal in this, they win it, I think.
I think the context is, Andy, that as I said earlier in the week, no one's stamping their authority on this Premier League yet. The stage is set. Every single team, really, based on what we've seen this season, maybe this is a little bit unfair to Liverpool, but I hope Liverpool fans, who've got a very charitable nature usually, will let me have this.
Well, have been beaten 7-2 this season.
Yeah, they've got flaws as well. Every single team has. But there's no standout.
Don't you think that makes it more difficult for Arsenal? Because, for example, like at the end of this season, if Manchester United don't get top three or four, it's just a failure. Whereas with Arsenal, it's far more difficult to call. If they were to have an improved season in terms of the way they play, in terms of their philosophy, good cup runs, decent run in Europe, and that they finish fifth, I think at the start of season, people would have said that's acceptable. But now, as you say, because the Premier League's so unpredictable, that carrot of the top four is being dangled. Are they really ready for the top four? Probably not. But if you know they've got that opportunity and they fail to take it, does that change the way you look at their season when it's at the end? And I think it probably does.
But the way I look at it is just the opportunity is there. Go and get it. Go and grab it. You've got flaws, but so is everyone.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. Manchester United are going to win 2-1. They're then going to go away to Istanbul, Basaksehir here. They'll have a battling win there. They will then lose to Everton when everyone's going, oh, Man United. And then they'll have some sort of a sloppy result the following week on the 21st of November against West Brom at home.
Could happen.
That, I think, is
Morgan Amalfitano is no longer in Europe, so I would say that's not possible.
There we go.
Oh, I see.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
You not remember Morgan Amalfitano?
Oh, I do,
goal
for West Brom.
At Old Trafford for West Brom.
It's amazing. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to place him in my mind. Too many footballers in there.
Yeah.
It's now time for Betway's Four to Score. Entry to Betway's Four to Score is, of course, free. Each week, you just pick the first goal scorer in Betway's four selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Please make sure your selections are submitted before the first game for obvious reasons, and further T's and C's apply. Okay, game number one. And before I get into game number one, Marcus, I should say that I'm actually in quite good form.
You are.
Two or three of the last four or five picks, I think. Yeah. But we haven't managed to win the jackpot
yet.
It's
a team game,
sadly. It is a team game, very much so. It's not about personal glories. Hopefully we can turn around that £50,000 jackpot for charity starting this week. Game number one, Aston Villa v Southampton, Sunday at midday. Who have you gone for, Marcus?
I've gone for Danny Ings. I went for him last time. He got a couple of assists, but not a goal. I think he was just warming up for this one. Although you put me on midday. You put me up first.
Yeah. I know what you mean. There's a lot of pressure on you there.
So I've gone for what I think is the obvious choice.
Danny Ings. Here's hoping some of the defenders are still having breakfast. Game number two, Newcastle United v Everton, Sunday at 2 o'clock. It's my pick. I've gone for Callum Wilson. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how Everton respond to that defeat against Southampton. But I think Newcastle could catch him a bit cold. And so I'm going to go Callum Wilson, who I think is a decent Premier League goal scorer.
Goals in him.
Game number three is the big one. It's Sunday, 4:30. We've already talked about it this afternoon. It's Manchester United v Arsenal. And our resident Man United fan is Vish, and he's gone for the following.
Hello, Ramblers. Vish here with my four to score for the biggest game of the weekend between Manchester United and Arsenal. Two teams who are definitely not relying on former glories to make this relevant. But I was thinking of going with Aubameyang here because he's on some kind of mad record non-scoring streak. But I'm going to go with Bruno Fernandes instead because it's just Man United are well good now. So Bruno Fernandes, first goal scorer.
He sounds like he's doing something else at the same time.
He's very relaxed.
Like he's reading a book or something. So that's Vicious. Bruno Fernandes is the third pick. Game number four is Spurs v Brighton, a.k.a. Kate Mason v Jules Breach. Sunday, 7:15 p.m. Andy, who's your pick?
Someone who won't be relaxed from the start, I think, is Heung-min Son. And so I'm going to go for him to hit Brighton early on in this game. Mm.
I think you really had a pick between two, didn't you? Kane or Son, and you've taken one of them. We'll see what happens. Danny Ings, Callum Wilson, Bruno Fernandes, Heung-min Son are our four picks for the first goal scorer in Betway's four to score. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly. For more information on that, head to begambleaware.org. All right, now it's time for this. It's one of those games that's quite difficult to explain, but you'll get it as soon as you start hearing it. It isn't time. Time for Luke's game. Get your fire in that belly, Andy. Marcus, get your head in the freezer.
It's also time for me to go, Charlie, can I have a pen?
Oh, really? You haven't got a pen? Well, listen, we're going to press on. If he brings you in a pen, he brings you in a pen. If not, you fail to prepare. Perhaps you prepare to fail. Mm. We've not been graced by the presence of lineal champion Jim Campbell this week. He will live to fight another day and defend his title on another occasion. But we have got two of the most decorated, most experienced and most loved players.
Is Andy that loved?
In Marcus. Okay, Marcus the People Champion.
Yeah.
You kind of nailed it down pretty early on.
On the weekend of Manchester United versus Arsenal, how fitting to have a clash that we've seen a million times before, relying on former glories.
Marcus has developed, I hope you don't mind me saying this, Marcus, he developed the role of, and incorporated the role of People's Champion by just turning up every Friday and getting battered every week by Brussels, to which everyone liked him.
I just, you know, people like my Tiger Tim Henman attitude.
They do. Go on, Tim.
But unlike Tim, I actually did overcome Andy once.
You did. And it was a great, it was like when Frank Bruno finally won the heavyweight title.
There's a lot of clenched fist on that side of the table. It is very Henman.
The fans are assembled outside on Marcus Mound, socially distanced, of course.
Of course.
So let's get into it. Okay, because the algorithm dictates that Andy Brassel is the number one seed, Marcus gets to go first. This didn't work in his favour a few weeks ago when he got visibly annoyed when Ali McCoist came out after he'd already been beaten. But what can you do? The first player...
Can we have Coisty again?
No, we can't, I'm afraid. The first player He's played for 6 clubs in total. And he retired in 2000.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It's Andy Townsend.
Andy Townsend. Not, 6 clubs.
Not for me, Clive. Yes,
not for
he did.
Me.
Played for 6 clubs.
I'm just staring into the eyeballs of Andy Brassel.
So if you're playing along at home, just get your pen and paper out, see how many Andy Townsend clubs you can name. Started his career in 1985.
Yes.
I'm giving facts out for the listeners. Uh-huh. I'm not trying to distract you. I want you to prep and I want you to give me a
sure.
number.
I will give you... I've got 2.
2. Andy, I see 3 from you.
Yeah.
Can you do 4, Marcus?
I'm going to have to go 4.
Okay. You want 5, Andy?
No.
5 for Marcus. Okay, so one at a time.
No, please. 4. 4 for me.
Sorry, I do apologise. 4 for Marcus because Andy doesn't want to do 5.
Yeah.
4 of the 6
oh,
clubs.
I want to do 5. I'm just not capable of it.
Okay. Yeah.
4 of the 6 clubs that Andy Townsend played for in his 15-year career. Of course, one thing I should say is he didn't actually start playing professional football until quite late on. But anyway, please carry on.
Okay. Chelsea.
That's correct. That's 1.
Aston Villa.
That's also correct. That's 2.
And now I'm struggling.
God, not many players. I mean, Jim Campbell, current lineal champion, would not be as aggressive to go for 2 guesses.
Yeah. Norwich City?
That is correct as well. Very good.
Very good.
Right. 1 more. This is where it gets tough.
Yeah.
This will test you.
How tough?
There's no hard or easy ones, mate. Just the ones you know and the ones you don't. He's got the fire in his belly, listeners. I think we can all establish that. But has he got his head in the freezer?
Yeah, I am going to go for... I don't know why this one is sticking out to me. Coventry City.
I'm afraid it's incorrect. Mm. That's a point to Andy. He's never played for Coventry City. He started his professional career, and that is key because he had a semi-professional career. Before that, at Southampton.
Ah.
Went to Norwich City, as you correctly identified. Chelsea, Aston Villa. Then he moved from Aston Villa to Middlesbrough and ended his career at West Brom.
My goodness.
For what he's worth, Marcus, I think he would have looked excellent in that Hummel commentary strip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, they've started playing in that again, haven't they? So maybe you could get himself
patronised from Andy, that, isn't it? It's 1-0 to Andy. You're up first this time, big man.
Okay.
Here we go. He's played for 6 clubs as well. Just a coincidence. That's how it goes. He retired in 2009. He is Dwight York.
Ooh, Yorkie.
White York. Okay.
Yeah. So I need you to tell me how many of the 6 clubs he's played for that you can name. A 19-year professional career, Dwight York. Good for him.
How many did we say?
There's been 6 in total. Marcus is counting them up on his fingers. I think Marcus, look, for what it's worth.
I think Marcus will go.
It's not for me to get involved, but I think Marcus could be strong on this.
I'm struggling.
I'm going to go 4.
4? Do I see 5 from you?
You knob, Andy.
That's right in the sweet spot, that, isn't
it? I know,
it, 4?
It is. Yeah. It really is. How confident are you with the 4?
I'm being reasonably cavalier.
Are you?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
No, this is that
I'm not going to listen
to
that.
A lot of old bollocks, that's a packet of bollocks.
That's really annoying because I would be fairly confident with 4 and the 5th one, I'm just not confident at all.
It's up to you. You've got to think of your tactics.
Yeah. I'll ask Andy to do his 4.
Okay, Andy.
I'm not confident.
Okay, fair enough. Different tactic.
Yeah.
Got to try it.
I had a go with Townsend. It didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't. So 4 clubs, please, that Dwight York's played for, Andy, 1 at a time.
Blackburn.
That's correct.
Manchester United.
That's obviously correct.
Aston Villa.
That's correct as well.
Sydney FC.
That's also correct.
Sydney FC. I knew it was an Australian one, but I couldn't guess. Sunderland he also played for, didn't he?
He did. So he played for Aston Villa, then went to Manchester United.
If someone played for Manchester United in a certain era, it's a pretty safe bet they played for Sunderland as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Blackburn Rovers, then Birmingham City, Sydney FC.
Birmingham
City.
Came back and had a bit of an Indian summer back at Sunderland because he checked out and went to Australia and he came back for 3 years at Sunderland.
Yeah, that's right.
So 2-0 to Andy Brassel with 3 to play.
Fair play with Sydney FC.
Though. Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. You're up again, Marcus,
here
first.
Here
he's also, I mean, again, this is just a coincidence, also played for 6 clubs. Mm-hmm. He retired in 2003. You're not going to thank me for this.
Oh, no.
But this is how it goes. Alan Boxic.
Well, blimey.
He satisfies the criteria.
How many?
He's played for 6 in total. Yeah. Not easy. Brassel's scribbling away, which I think is disrespectful at this stage.
Well, I'm doing that Paul Ince thing. I'm writing,
shoot,
get the answers on the piece of paper.
The thing is, Andy, you bastard.
It's not Marcus. I think what we need to understand here now is that we do have criticism about the technique. We have criticism about the game itself and how unlucky you are. And he's just a good player. It's how it goes. There's nothing you can do about it.
Four.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
That's brilliant.
Have you four? Go on.
All right.
That's brilliant.
All right.
I didn't expect. I don't mean to be rude.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go one.
Okay.
So four is great. Okay. Let's hear them one at a time. Alan Boxich.
Middlesbrough.
That's correct. Finished his career there.
Marseille.
That's also correct. Very good.
Lazio.
That is correct as well.
Juventus.
Well played.
Oh, that is easy. Yes. You said Alan Boxich. I knew what I was doing.
That's for me. That's the highlight of the season.
That's very good.
That is very, very good.
Did he also play for Sampdoria?
So Hajduk Split.
Yeah.
Cannes. Marseille, Lazio, Juventus, Lazio again, then Middlesbrough. If you'd said Sampdoria, you would have been going home.
I would have been wrong.
Yeah.
Back in it.
Two. I'll tell you what.
You're back on course for the caravan.
I'd just like to share with the listeners.
Can you just describe what's going on in Marcus Mount?
They're going
the
crazy. I'm the listener surrogate here. Can I just share a moment with the listeners? You're 2-0 down and you get Alan Boxich and you come back like that. It's an absolute game changer.
It's a 35-yarder into the top corner.
It's Tom Kearney-esque.
Okay, Andy, you're up.
Could be short-lived.
Again, this player's played for six clubs. Started his career in 1992. Six clubs in total. He is Didi Haman.
Okay.
Hey, you got a chance here now, Marcus. You've put yourself in with a chance. This is a great game so far. 2-1 to Andy. Marcus brings it back to 2-1.
Five.
When he looked to be out, down and out.
Hang about. Five.
Yeah.
Fine.
You're going to have to go six.
No, I can't.
Okay, so Andy, you need to name five.
Do you know what's happened here? And I understand he hasn't named the five.
Yeah.
But this is classic. Andy's like, hang on a minute, I'm number one. All this kind of well done with your Boxich, I'm now going to kick you into touch.
Yeah. Like, it's a boxing match. You've got a round back.
Yeah.
Now he's going to batter you.
Yeah. It's like when Bruno got back in the ring with Tyson or something. Yeah, exactly. This is what's about to happen to me.
All right.
How glass is my jaw?
So, five of the six clubs that Didi Haman played for in a career from 1993 to 2011. One at a time, please. Off you go.
FC Bayern München.
Correct.
Newcastle United.
Correct.
Liverpool.
Also correct.
Bottom Wanderers.
Yeah.
Manchester City.
Well, you got it.
Andy Brassel wins.
Can't argue with that.
Well played, mate. Very good.
Thank you.
I mean, presumably you could name the sixth as well, can you?
It's not springing to mind.
The sixth club he played for is Milton Keynes Dons.
No,
oh,
you wouldn't speak their name in the studio.
Exactly.
So that's why.
Yeah, I didn't know the German club.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I had about three.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes.
I'd like to say to all the fans on Marcus Mount,
they've gone. They've just left.
I'd like to say that, you know, I know your candidate didn't win, but I'm your president now. And I will be reaching out to you and addressing your needs.
Perhaps you've got a message for Jim Campbell, who's probably listening.
Mm.
No message.
Oh.
It's funny because now all I can hear from Marcus Mount is not my president.
Yeah.
Being China.
they're shouting Brassel's Boulder. Brassel's Boulder.
Brassel's Boulder.
They're very, very fickle, those fans out there. The final player, we'll do very, very quickly. We'll run through just quickly because we've got a couple of minutes. Would have been Marcus going first. He's played for eight clubs in total, and it's Ray Houghton.
Ray Houghton. Yeah, no idea.
Could have done a couple.
I could do a couple. Ray Houghton.
It's hard in 2000. Amazing.
That's quite 21
year career.
That's
what the algorithm throws up sometimes.
I've only got two, I think.
Two? Could you do more than two?
Yeah, I could do more than two.
It's showing off.
Yeah, I know.
Go on, name as many as you can, Andy. Go on.
Oxford.
Oh, I see.
Liverpool.
Yeah.
Villa.
Oh, Villa, of course.
I'm a bit stuck there, actually.
Yeah, so you could have West Ham United, Fulham, Oxford United, Liverpool, Aston Villa, Crystal Palace, Reading, and Stevenage Borough.
Mm.
It's a win for his brother. Yeah, he played for Palace for a couple of seasons in the mid-90s. You could have had all those, but you didn't. Doesn't matter. You won the game anyway.
Yeah, well,
another
done,
win for you, Brassel. Marcus, you're going to have to pick yourself up, dust yourself down, and live to fight another day.
I've done it before.
Thank you
I'll
very
have to
much.
Do it again.
Thank you very much for playing Luke's game. I bloody enjoyed it.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Well, there we are. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Betway, everybody. It's been lovely having you with us. That's it. Have another fabulous Friday on the Football Ramble. Enjoy your weekends. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
Thank you, good listeners. See you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.